This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Dave Fallon, along with co-host and Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy.
Hi there, Dave.
Our subject, the proposed settlement of the lawsuit challenging the 2011 state pension overhaul. Now, the proposal is back in mediation after its rejection by one of the six public employee groups involved in the initial round of voting. Our guest to talk about this is Mr. Gary Sass, former director of the Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council, former director of administration in the Carcieri administration, now director of the Bryant Institute for Public Leadership. Gary, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We're a business-oriented segment, so my first question may get ahead of things a bit, but if I'm a business person out of state looking to possibly relocate in Rhode Island and I see all of this lengthy pension business going on, what should I be thinking about this?
Well, you know, there are bigger issues in the specifics on the pension. If I was a business looking to locate, I'd be very concerned about the cost of doing business in Rhode Island, the tax structure, failing school system, regulatory environment. And I also would be concerned about ethics and how the political process works. So this would be a subset of a broader concern. Do I want to locate my business where the Speaker of the House just resigned under unfortunate circumstances, where public unions are very strong and this is in litigation? So it's part of a broader mosaic, but I don't think a business is focusing just in on this issue narrowly.
But if I'm a business and I need to make a strategic decision, what gives there? I'm looking at potentially weeks and months of discussion of this.
If I'm a business and have to make a strategic decision, I'd look at the bottom line. You know, I'd look at, you know, whether the location would be good, whether it would be near markets, whether the costs would be competitive, and whether I trusted the political leadership. Now, one factor alone is not going to affect that. So what's happening with the pension, as I said a minute ago, is part of a broader mosaic. I'm looking at the bottom line, and part of the bottom line is the political atmosphere of the state.
And I'm looking at it, let's not worry right now about a business trying to relocate here, but how about the businesses and the taxpayers in the state as it is? Because right now, the settlement is in mediation again. There is a distinct possibility that they don't come to some sort of agreement right now, and it goes to trial, and maybe in trial, the whole, you know, settlement, which lopped billions of dollars off of the pension unfunded liability, all of a sudden goes back on the state's books. And that looks like a pretty big issue.
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly business hates uncertainty. I think there was a sigh of relief from the business community when the pension legislation was passed because it got the state clearly out of a financial pickle. When the union sued and went to mediation, I think business is watching, you know, very closely. And again, they don't appreciate the uncertainty. So with the latest development, that just adds to that, heightens that concern.
Doesn't it also limit the state's ability and to respond or invest in its people, in its assets? I mean, if you're going from, say, a pension contribution of $400+ million a year to more than $800 million a year, which is what I think it was scheduled to do in 2016 without the agreement, I mean, that's another $400 million that somehow the state's got to find a way to cover, right?
Well, yeah, and it was clear that the legislature passed the pension reform legislation because it would have created financial crises for a number of cities and towns and for the state. And so it would have taken money out of education, you know, money out of tax reform, money out of other things the state's responsible to do. And so there was some level of certainty with the agreement. Now, what came from the mediation can be looked at in two different ways. You know, one way, if you look at just in terms of raw numbers, the mediation resulted in the state getting 94% of what was in the legislation. But it's still a lot of money. There's another $25 million that has to come up with, you know, this year. And it increases the unfunded pension liability by over $230 million. So while the percentage is small, the dollar numbers are not insignificant. And that's a judgment call. And you know, I can clearly see some people saying, no, it's best to avoid the risk and give back 6% of what we got in the legislation and move forward. And that was what the agreement was between the unions and public management. Now that the mediation is back in question, it does raise another question, which is hard to answer. But the state has always contended that this pension is not a contract, not an implied contract. It's done by statute. And so we will not have an answer to that question, you know, from the mediation. And when you think about risks going forward, not getting that question settled once and for all is also something that you have to think about, because when you look at the state's financial position and you look at the very tepid economic recovery we're having, no one wants to raise the issue of pensions again. No one plans on raising the issues of pensions again. But at least from a taxpayer perspective, you have the comfort in believing that it's not a contractual obligation. And with the mediated settlement, that becomes a question as well.
This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio, and our guest is Gary Sass, director of the Bryant Institute for Public Leadership. Continuing with that thought, it seems that this whole question will have to eventually go back to the General Assembly. Even more time to get that done, and that leaves the door open for amendments, et cetera?
Well, that's the bizarre part of this whole conversation. You know, the Assembly is ultimately responsible for making a decision. The Assembly made its decision by passing legislation. Both parties go to mediation. And then as a result of that mediation, the Assembly is told, you can't exercise independent judgment. You have to rubber stamp, you know, what comes up. When you look at the way legislatures work, not in Rhode Island, but the Congress and legislatures in the other 49 states, that is a very bizarre position to put the legislature in, quite frankly. A lot of us have fought for separation of powers. This, in my mind, raises the question, how effective a separation of powers? Because you're telling a legislative body that they have no choice if they want to approve this agreement, not to review it, just to rubber stamp it. You know, going through the details, I think you can make a case. It's very clear what's there, so they know what they're buying, but they're certainly not given the opportunity to insert their own judgment.
And the new Speaker of the House, Mattiello, has said that really gives him pause.
Well, there was a lot of political blood shed to get the pension law changed, and they were the people that shed the blood.
Is there the possibility that all of this could wind up in a different court, federal court perhaps?
I don't know. I'm not an attorney, but if the mediated settlement is not somehow agreed to and it goes to trial, I don't think there's any question that the side that does not prevail will appeal and it'll go to the state Supreme Court. Whether or not there's federal jurisdiction, I personally think there you can make a case for federal jurisdiction, but neither party has raised that yet, so I don't know.
In the time we have left, let's move on to a question of financing of the Superman building in downtown Providence. There is a new proposal from the owner to secure $39 million plus dollars in state aid in order to leverage that into possibly other financing. This latest proposal would spread out the $39 million plus into roughly four payments. What's your impression of that?
Well, you know, the spreading out is not the question. The question is whether or not there's a viable market for what the developer is proposing. The second question is important, whether you spread the payment out over 4 years or you make the payment over 1 year, is what kind of protections are the taxpayers afforded. It's a real estate deal. Everyone looks at Kennedy Plaza and says the taxpayer is between a rock and a hard place. In my opinion, no one has really come up with a solution. But the question is there a market? And if there is a market, how do you build protection for taxpayers? How do you give them, frankly, an equity interest? So the taxpayer, and there's a return on investment for taxpayers, and I don't think we have enough information to make a judgment based on those questions I raise.
You know, it's interesting that in this deal, which the numbers are pretty much the same as the deal as it was proposed a year ago, I mean the actual numbers, but the developer, High Rock, did say they would buy a completion bond to guarantee that the work was finished. If there were a refinancing or a sale, an exit of the property, they would kick $9 million of the $39 million into a state redevelopment fund, which would leave the developer with $30 million. Now, interestingly, he said, well, $30 million is about what we would have gotten under the previous Historic Preservation Tax Credit program before it was modified in 2008, which I think is kind of an interesting bit of logic, you know, saying, we're not going by what's happening now. We want to presume that we're going to take advantage of a law that was, you know, five years ago.
I think that's true. I think the developers have come up with a much better proposal now than a year ago. There's also a willingness to invest some in keeping Kennedy Plaza up. So to that extent, it's positive. But two things. At the end of the day, as I said before, no project is worth a penny of investment unless there's a market for that project. Just to invest money in a project and not have it sustainable makes no sense. And the second issue on historic tax credits, in the state, and I may have a minority position, were really abused. When I was in state government and looked at the amount of tax credits that we had authorized, the size of some of the tax credits, the kind of taxpayers that were getting those credits, the brokerage activities around those tax credits, the debt the state is still paying because of those tax credits, I tread very lightly.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Gary Sess, director of the Bryant Institute for Public Leadership.
Thank you.
Also thanks to Mark Murphy of Providence Business News.
Thanks as always, Dave.
I'm Dave Fallon. This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR.
Support for The Bottom Line comes from Bank RI, a local bank creating financial solutions to help small businesses grow and succeed. More at bankri.com.